Thanks for tuning in to Untangle Your Story. I'm your host, Jerry Doyen. In sharing our stories, little by little, we chip away at the taboo that has surrounded our experiences. 35 million kids are experiencing today the horrors that we ourselves have known all too well. Our mission here is to share our stories of pain and our triumphs to give you a roadmap to freedom. There is more. Surviving's not a state to be striving for. We join minds with fellow survivors and experts to give you the tools to create strategies to uncover that strand of the story that's uniquely you. That's the prize in the end, isn't it? Becoming visible. Today I'm excited to have with us Dawn Carson. After surviving a debilitating breakdown, she chose to wean herself off the numerous medications and begin her search for another way. Traditional methods exhausted, Dawn began her investigation and discovery of alternative healing modalities. Through this unique blend, Dawn found natural ways to move from a state of merely surviving into a life created by her own design. Dawn is now thriving and wants to share with all of those that care to hear, there is more. There's joy. Dawn, hello. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It sounds as if we've had very similar journeys. I know that, I don't know what led you to your breakdown, but I would love for you to kind of share the circumstances around that and, you know, kind of what led you to writing your book.
Sure. My breakdown started in 2006, and it basically, through my recovery, I discovered why it happened. It wasn't something I was aware of at the time, but basically it was a lifetime of very wrong living and not knowing it was wrong. I didn't understand the concepts of self-care, setting boundaries, what negativity and positivity even were. I was a happy-go-lucky person, but it didn't mean that I actually understood what it was to be positive. So it was lots of things like not knowing how to say no. I was the go-to girl at work to take on shifts even when it was my day off, and I never said no. Taking on parts of my family life that were not my role. I was always the one who was sort of the peacekeeper, wanted to make sure everyone was always happy, but often at the detriment of my own health and well-being. So a couple of times when I was going to school, dropped out because there was a health issue in my family and felt it was my need to take care of them when it really wasn't appropriate for me to do so. So it was a lot of things like that and just not realizing my own value and that my dreams are important too. And that absolutely it's important to support. But if you're not supporting yourself first, you're kind of useless to everyone else.
That's a big one, right, for us to understand. I like to think of the airplane, you know, where they're like, put your mask on first.
Exactly.
You know, we as women are used to just giving, right? Can I ask, what was your childhood like? What led you to this?
I had a broken home, so my parents split up when I was probably 9, and there was definitely a volatile history there. I was happy with my dad and I was happy with my mom, but they weren't happy together. So when they divorced, there was a lot of tension and bitterness and a lot of them not knowing how to deal with the situation, and things were unfortunate that we were sort of tossed around as kids. When I was with my dad, I was happy with him, but I didn't see him as often as I would have liked. But there was also a lot of I learned false learnings from things in that situation. So my dad wanted me to meet his girlfriend, and I was supposed to sort of keep that just between us. So it was a lot of me learning to be a secret keeper, to have it where everyone else's value was more important than mine, what they wanted was more important than me. As a teenager, I went through a really big depression, but I never told anyone. So no one knew I was hurting. I had the smile on my face, and I really wanted to see just my dad. But it was put in place that, well, no, I have a stepmom now and she's part of the family. And I didn't understand how to manage that, like to assert myself and say, well, I love her too, but sometimes I just need time with you. And with my mom, you know, there was a previous stepdad who was not the most emotionally balanced person. And so me trying to approach my mom, a lot of times he was in the way saying very negative things to me. There was some abuse there, verbal and emotional abuse from that man who's no longer in our lives. And then going into my 20s, I had a really great stepmom, a really great stepdad, and everything's kind of come full circle. But unfortunately, I had learned so many false lessons that no one actually said anything necessarily like, you need to think this or you need to believe this, but it's just what I took as a child to be truth. So things
now,
like...
Did you have siblings?
They're more important. Yeah, I have two brothers, and I now have three stepsisters.
Now how were you in the... You were in the middle. I'm the only girl.
Yeah.
So you kind of took that place of the fix it.
Yeah, and that somehow I got it in my mind that it was very much my responsibility to take care of everybody, to the point where even things like if it was someone's birthday in my family, I would call every family member to tell them to remember to call them. My responsibility.
Yeah.
Just stuff I learned.
And then you wonder, why did you step into carrying such a burden?
Yeah, I think it's mostly because naturally I'm such a giver, and I'm someone who wants people to be happy. I love to see a smile on a person's face. And growing up, I felt that way. I felt like I just want everyone to be happy. And what if this doesn't happen if I don't say something? Somehow I came to the conclusion at probably 9 years old that, you know what, if I don't do it, maybe no one else will, and then that person will be sad because they didn't get, a birthday card or they didn't get a phone call. Or really silly, but that's just what I came up with.
No, it's not silly at all, because probably no one else was thinking about it, for you to see that, So when you say a mental breakdown, can you share with us? Because I think, often people can have a breakdown without going in the hospital. I mean, I think there's a level of functioning where you're just able to get up and do what you're supposed to sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mine was pretty severe. What did that look like?
So it started off with, I had a really, really high stress year. So the reason why the breakdown was so severe is because, yes, there was accumulating of all of these things that I learned falsely, but in this particular year, it was a very high-stress year. I had a death in the family, a death of a family friend. I moved to a new home. I moved back to my parents' house, and then I started school, changed schools. I was managing a band, quit managing the band. There was so much change, and by just after my 30th birthday, and it's not because I turned 30. I was very happy to turn 30. But after just so much accumulated in a really short time, and then a coworker ended up with brain cancer. And I just was on this roller coaster of she's going to be okay, she's not going to be okay, she's not going to be okay, she's going to be okay. And then I was going to school full time and holding two jobs down, maintaining a social life. I was overdoing everything. And so it started off as me having an anxiety attack that lasted 48 hours.
It's almost like you were trying to gain control over something.
Yeah.
But I was here by doing, orchestrating
it. Yeah, I'm going to just thrive. I've got to be. And it was just too much. And eventually I kind of felt like, I don't know if people watch Monty Python, but there's the Monty Python sketches where the big foot comes down and squishes the person.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what God did, I guess. It was like, you're not listening, now you don't have a choice. So it started off with this really, really massive anxiety attack. And basically it was, I got home from work when I had gone in on my day off. And when I got home, I was sitting on the couch and I was frozen and all of a sudden filled with completely irrational dread. And my mom, thankfully, knew, she recognized the signs, and she said, I think you're having an anxiety attack. So she took me to the doctor. But from then on, I was good for 2 days, went back to work, and then I started having an anxiety attack every day, not as debilitating, but where I would have tightness in my chest. I couldn't breathe properly. I'm just really terrified for no reason and not able to cope with my emotions. So then after 3 weeks of every day this happening, I had to drop out of school and I had to go on medical leave from my job. And that put me into, everything I've tethered my life to is now gone. And I ended up into a severe depression. I really spiraled down quickly over the case of about 2 more weeks. And then by Christmas, and this happened in November of 2006, and by Christmas I was just holding on. I was very suicidal. I was constantly coming up with these thoughts that would come in my head telling me, oh, there's a whole bunch of vitamins you could take, and that would overdose you, or there's a whole bunch of pain medication, or there's alcohol and pain medication, or there's tweezers in your bathroom, or there's razors in your bathroom. And it's like I couldn't shut it off. So on Boxing Day, I had survived Christmas, and that's all I had really thought about was just get through Christmas. And Boxing Day, I checked myself into the psych ward, and I was only there for one night. And then when I woke up the next day, I was like, oh, I feel fine. I'm good. Someone needs the bed more than me. And so I went home for 1 week and then became actively suicidal, where I kept actually moving towards, I'm going to make an attempt. And I was involved in a church at the time where the elders stepped in and said, it's okay for you to go to the psych ward. It's okay. You actually need this. And so then I spent 6 weeks in there. And it didn't help me get better, but at least put me in a safe environment where I could get out of my head a little. And I learned some good tools
time,
there.
Right? But, like, because I know going through mine, it was
time.
Like, oh, my gosh, to have time. Because I'd often thought about that. Like, oh, my gosh, maybe I just should go somewhere because at least I would have time without expectation.
Yeah,
of doing.
And where there was a lot of structure, people were
and
telling
support.
Me when you were, and lots of support, and everyone else there was a little bit crazy too. So it felt like I wasn't the only one off my rocker. So,
but don't you feel because I had a year like that as well, right? Like, you know, my grandmother died, who was like my mother, you know. I mean, God literally threw my house off the hill. Like, my house, like, just started crumbling and sliding off this hill. And I lost everything I'd worked for. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like a year like that. I get it, you know? And I would just, like, go to work, and I own my own business. So luckily I could do that. And there were days where I would just, like, write a sign on the door saying, I can't be here now.
Yeah.
And I'd just drive, right? Like, and, you know, and I would hear voices like, it was never for myself, like, I don't know. It was a weird voice that would just be like, you could just run into this cliff. Or, you could just drive off the side of the, you know, or you could just jump off the roof. You know what I mean? It was just a.
Yeah.
So I never got to the point of actually doing anything. But.
Well, I thankfully I never actually made an attempt, but I was very, very close. And I think that the psych ward saved me. I don't like that I had to be there, but definitely it was the safest place because it's not like I could expect people to just watch me all the time. I mean, I'm 30 years old.
Right.
Like, people have their own lives, you know.
Right.
It was really tough on my family to watch me go through that. And when, you know, I was on day passes or weekend passes from the hospital, it was really challenging for my family to see me go from a highly intellectual, engaging person to I was really silent. I just didn't have thoughts, which was so bizarre. And I would have it where I couldn't really express myself and I couldn't identify with words like joy or happy. They didn't have meaning anymore, but my body would physically grieve for me. So I remember playing dominoes with my mom, and she had colored ones, which was good because I could see the difference in color instead of having to concentrate on counting how many dots there were. And we would play, and we had to have a towel down because my senses through this experience were very heightened. I couldn't handle sound. I couldn't handle light. I couldn't handle anything the average person could handle sensory-wise. So we would play dominoes on a blanket so it was silent. And every once in a while, my eyes would just start sobbing for me, but I had no emotional attachment. And I remember her even asking, like, do we need to stop? And I said, I think my body's just grieving because I don't know how to connect with this. I'm not actually feeling. I'm so beyond feeling now. I'm numb, but my body is processing it for me. So it was a very interesting experience.
It's interesting about joy. I came from a very abusive childhood. And I think that, I've had much experience with Mr. Deepak Chopra. And, he often talked about the happiness, set point that, you know, it's almost like what happens as a child, like what your expectations are, what you're content with. Does that make sense? Like that line where you start, you know, and joy, to me, happiness was very fleeting, right? It was like an experience. And, you know, a lot of kids, like, didn't ever know joy. So it's interesting that you had that. Like, so you had something to, like, know you wanted to get back to.
Yeah. I was, I mean, as
do you know what I'm saying?
Parents,
like, which is interesting,
me.
Different little twist to it.
Yeah, because I did, I do have that. I mean, I always knew I was loved. I never experienced a feeling of I'm not loved. I just didn't have the feeling of I'm understood or valued. I didn't understand what that looked like. But the thing like joy, I have always been really connected to nature and animals. And so my moments of joy growing up were always things like me playing make-believe in my grandparents' backyard or, you know, things like that where it was usually just me with nature or God or whatever you want to call it. Whereas I think some people found joy through their family relationships. I found happiness there, like you were saying, how that's fleeting. When I was with my dad, I was happy with him. When I was with my mom, I was happy with her, but there was no, like, tethering mark for that.
It's interesting because mine was nature as well. Like, I lived out in the country, so I would disappear. You know, it was, like, cool to be able to just, like, disappear, right? And I'd be in the woods, like, for a whole day. And that was my balance, you know, to the chaos inside the house. I always like to say, you know, the only thing out of sync in nature is us humans.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're out in nature, like, you know, especially if you're by yourself and there are no other people around, it will pull you back to center, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. I reached a point with my therapist where I knew, you know, that there was so much trapped in my body cellularly. You know, I mean, I was in therapy for 30 years off and on with, you know, I had three sexual abusers, and my dad was very violent. And so, you know, there was no steady ground ever to stand on.
Right.
It was always moving. And, you know, with the therapist, you know, for myself, that talk therapy, it got to a point where it's like, okay, I could talk about this till I'm blue in the face, like, and not even have an emotional reaction. But my body is dying.
Yeah.
I felt like
and
my
I think
body
unfortunately
was dying.
That's where I think in some ways therapy fails because it's only talking. Like there needs to be more involved. And the best therapists in the world, in my opinion, incorporate more than just talking. They get you doing art therapy or they get you doing a physical aspect to your therapy or something that taps into other parts of yourself. Because talking about it, you can do that with a girlfriend. I mean, I can have a little hen party and just, you know, cluck away about our grievances. But that doesn't actually help you in the long term. It's nice to share and feel like you've got a common ground. But then how do you move forward? If you don't have the tools to move forward, you're kind of just stuck talking about it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I really, it took action for me, you know. It was like, you know, putting a thought with action to actually move it through my body. I don't, you know, I also touched, you know, and that kind of stuff gets in our body in so many different ways that for myself, it took a lot of different, you know, it seemed like the healers I came in contact with had a one modality, right? Like, so it took me touching numerous people to actually get that out of my body.
I agree. And actually, I think it's important for people to realize that that's sort of, I think, how it works. I don't think that you're going to have one magic little pill that's going to fix everything. It's going to be a process of, okay, start using gratitude, start sharing your successes, start looking at dancing as a modality or Reiki or whatever, but not just expecting one thing to cure you because you didn't have all of this burden and crap end up in your cells from one thing. It's a lifetime of stuff that accumulates. And so sometimes absolutely there's one defining moment that really crushed your spirit, but I guarantee that's not the only thing that's done some crushing.
Right.
So
otherwise,
you
wouldn't have been crushed by that, right? Like, I mean, if that were the only thing, you wouldn't have been knocked completely off center. And,
exactly.
It, you know, it's a
and
rinse and repeat. You know, I felt like, you know, it was like I was walking through, you know, a field of landmines, and you go through and you get the top layer, and then you go through and get another layer, and you go through and get another layer. It wasn't like a, you know, wave a magic wand and I was better.
I think actually I've discovered that everything, because I do a lot of personal development work, I'm always reading and I'm always doing little online programs and taking courses, and I'm sort of addicted to it now. But as I do all of this learning, I realize I'm just unlearning. I think we start off as this gem of a person, this star shining brightly, and then we add layers of stuff that doesn't really belong, and then you get to a point where you start uncovering layers and uncovering more of what's really you and what's really that beautiful core person.
We come to the planet as gods and goddesses. I like to take the Jesus story and say, you know, hey, as it was, you had this God come to the planet in the perfect circumstances, and it took him 33 years to become. What if you're having to crawl out of a hole first before you can become?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you have to.
Like, give yourself
uncover.
A break. Give yourself a break, right?
I know.
I like to say,
and,
you know,
enjoy the process too. Realize it is a process. It's not going to happen overnight. So just sort of enjoy the discovery as you go.
Yeah, I like to look at it as a game. It was like, okay, what's the next piece? You know, what's the next piece?
Yeah.
I loved it, actually.
And
I love working with people as they're going through the process. It's like, let's uncover you, because that's what's so cool in the end, is that you're under there somewhere, under all that rubble and bad programming, right?
Exactly.
Let's see. So tell us a little bit about your podcast, The Radiant Mind.
My podcast, it's called The Radiant Mind. It's pretty new. I've only had it for a few weeks. That came because the book was really exciting for me to publish, and it gets the word, my message out there of how to make simple steps to a better life. But I realized, you know, I'm only reaching readers. So what about the people who don't read? And I wasn't prepared at that time to do an audio book. Like, at some point I will do that, but that's time consuming. And it's such a long process. So I thought, well, why not give snippets of information and real nice bite-sized pieces on a podcast? And so I took a course with a guy named Sam Crowley, who he has the podcast Every Day is Saturday, brilliant podcast. And he basically taught us how to just very easily put a podcast together. So how to record, how to edit, and then how to actually launch it. And so it's a weekly. I was expecting it to be a daily podcast and realized that's a lot more work than I thought. So I scaled it back. It's a weekly podcast. I will be sharing and have been sharing just little tips I know that have helped me or have helped people I know to just kind of live a better life. So there will be one on compliments. What is the power of a compliment and how to use it to the best of everyone's world? Things like, you know, using a success journal or a gratitude diary, grounding by just being outside barefoot, just so many things that I've uncovered. And then I'll always be adding more new material as I learn more and more. And then I also will be doing interviews intermittently, just with either local authors or healers or whoever would like to come in and just share what do they do and what sort of things can it help with. I actually just interviewed a very young author. She's 14 years old. It's just been launched today. Her book is called The Life Book. She's 14. She was writing it since she was 8, and I just want to get her message out, because to me, I just want to spread the love around. That's my absolute core value. I want more love in the world and more joy in the world, and for people to realize it's a lot simpler to capture that than they think it is, because I used to think it was a really challenging thing, and simple practices that you just daily enter into your life and choose the ones that work for you and choose the ones that inspire you the most and just implement them daily, your whole life will change. So,
but it does take diligence, you know. I mean, I think we're in a society where everybody wants a magic pill, and it takes diligence. Jesus says it takes diligence to, you know, watch over your mind. you know.
Yeah.
Because one negative thought, I love his one phrase where he says, one drop of dark into the light makes little or no difference, but one drop of dark into the light makes it gray and murky instantly. It's like that thought that comes in, we have to be very diligent to turn it around and say, no, thank you. I don't think I want that thought today. You know, because I quickly turn it into a story.
Mm-hmm. It takes practice to learn being mindful of how are you actually, what are you thinking? But the easiest indicator for that is how are you feeling? If you're feeling crummy in all areas of your life, you are having negative thoughts. You cannot have positive thoughts and really crappy feeling at the same time. It just doesn't, they just don't flow together. So if the two tools I give every coaching client and every student in the courses I'm creating is the gratitude journal. Find something to be grateful for every day, minimally,
every day.
Before you go to bed and when you first wake up. And then I use an emotional check-in. And so I use these two tools every single day without fail, usually multiple times a day. But the emotional check-in is such a cool tool. I know that they use it in 12-step programs. But it's basically you check in, how do you feel spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, and socially? And you just ask yourself on a daily basis, how am I feeling in these areas? Because then it lets you know what areas of my life do I actually need to work on? Because we're so used to saying, I feel fine, I feel okay, I'm good, but that's totally BS, and you're not really looking at how do you actually feel. And so when you use a tool like that, I mean, it happens when I'm driving a lot, not sure why, but it's basically as soon as I start driving, I ask myself these questions, and I just find that, okay, you know what, I think I need to work on my spiritual relationship right now, because spiritually I'm feeling kind of removed, or socially I break it into family, friends, coworkers, etc., and I'll say, like, how am I feeling about my family right now? Maybe I'm feeling disconnected, and then I know what action to take, because the actions and feelings are very much linked, and they are all linked to your thoughts. So your feelings kind of give you the indicator or the barometer of what your life is doing, so you can say, oh, you know what, I'm thinking poorly. What can I do to change that thought life? Well, action is the way. So to give you an example, when I was in the hospital, I was having a really rough day. I kept napping and had no motivation to do anything. I was not involved in any of the classes that were going on that day, and I just thought I had learned this. There was a triangle tool of thoughts, feelings, and actions, and how they're linked, and how just change one of them and the others automatically change. And so I was feeling crummy, and I know my thoughts were reeling in a bad place in a bad way. And so I thought, okay, you know what? How can I shift this? So I got a pass to go outside for 20 minutes, and I went for a walk. And just the action of moving my body was enough to shift me a little bit out of that space. I was still in the depths of depression. Don't get me wrong, that wasn't like a cure-all. But it elevated my mood just slightly enough to get me where I wasn't napping all day. So it's just kind of looking at what are you doing that you could change in the area that needs it the most. Very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I even tell people, you know, if you're stuck in a situation, just move. Just get up and stand in a different place in the room, because you're going to be accessing different information. And you're actually, you know, putting action with an intent. Like, I want an answer. Get up and move. You know, life is kind of like a GPS. I use the GPS a lot when I'm working with my clients. It's like, you know, you have to have a destination. You know, if you're working with your GPS, as long as you're sitting in the parking lot, she is not talking.
So true.
You know, and if you put that, you can't put like a wishy-washy destination. You have to put a clear-cut destination, and you have to start moving. And it doesn't matter where you're moving, because it will guide you back, but you have to move. You have to get up and start moving. You know, God doesn't talk when you're just sitting on the couch.
It's true.
Very rarely.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us how people can find your stuff, how they can find you, how they can access your book and your programs. Tell a little bit about your programs.
So the Radiant Mind podcast, it's available on Podbean. The link is through my website, dawncarson.com. You can also go to radiantmind.ca. The same website, it's just two different ways to get to it. I'm on Twitter. It's at capital D for Dawn, D-A-W-N, underscore Carson, capital C-A-R-S-O-N. And then I'm also on Facebook. It's Bloomin' Dawn, Bloomin' without a G, Blooming but without a G, Dawn. That's the kind of social network I'm on. But for things like courses, that will all be implemented into my website. I will be doing some online programs, and I'm creating a program right now that's 9 courses that will probably be launched, I'm guessing, in February. And the link to my podcast through iTunes is actually on my website as well. It's just on the homepage. You scroll down and see the beautiful covered art, and they can link through it that way. My book is available on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, and there is a print copy as well as an ebook available. And if someone were wanting to have a free copy of the ebook, I actually would offer it to the listeners of your show. They could just email me, dawncarson9, at icloud.com, and I would just send them a free copy of the ebook.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. That's very generous of you. Well, it was good to have you with us. Now, if you could leave our listeners with one thought, what would that be?
Look for things to be grateful for. If you list out a list of things that you love, everything from what you love the smell of, the sound of, the taste of, the feel of, go through your senses, look at all the people in your life that you love, list them all out and start using gratitude daily. Even if you don't feel grateful, list off stuff you're grateful for. Write them down 3 things twice a day, and make that a habit for 7 days and see how things go. Look at how things shift. Because the more you focus on gratitude, the more you're going to find things to be grateful for. And so just use that tool to amplify your life. You basically you have to look at things a little differently. If you're really struggling, do your best to find a way out. And one of the easiest tools is gratitude. Have it where I'm grateful I have breath in my lungs today, or I'm grateful for my dog or my cat or my child or my husband. Grateful that you have a roof over your head. Everyone has something, and you can just find more and more. And the more, you will just make yourself more joyful in general.
You know, every time I have a negative thought, that's what I do. Gratitude is a huge part for me. Anytime I have a negative thought, I'll turn it around. But I'm grateful for this, aspect of whatever circumstance, right? Even with my abusers, I look and I'm but I am very grateful that, I have the genetics of this person and that, you know what I mean? It's very helpful to me.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. That's something that I do minute by minute pretty much.
I'm actually, the thing I'm most grateful for in my whole life is that I had a breakdown, because it showed me I was not living well, and it was the greatest gift to be able to have to be in a position where I had to claw myself up from the ground, up a giant hill, to learn all this amazing stuff that would never have occurred to me to look into before. So you can turn your most dark place into a place of power if you're willing to look at it that way. Obviously,
well, yeah,
not when you're in it.
You know what you've got to bring to the table now? Before you didn't,
exactly.
Really, right?
I wouldn't have a book. I wouldn't have a book out there if I hadn't had a breakdown.
Exactly. Me either, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. And, I think that, our experiences kind of, they culminate in our purpose. And, I would never, change my experiences, even though I had, some not pleasant ones. I definitely know what I have to bring to the table.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I think it's worth looking at, realizing that you would not be the amazing person you are if you had not gone through every moment of your life, good, bad, and ugly.
Yep.
It's just, you're a product of the world you've created over time. So now you can just move to create better and better things, and to share more loving experiences and joyful experiences with people, and just do your best to make your mark in the world that's a bright one.
Well, thanks, Dawn. You're doing some amazing work. I'd be honored to walk beside you and be your guide as you begin the process of untangling your story. With daily access, you'll never be alone. For more information, reach out through my website at sherrydoyan.com. We all have the ability to begin to write a new chapter and create a life that's more than merely surviving. I believe it's not only a choice, but our responsibility collectively to heal. The world needs us awake and healthy. We're the world's quiet warriors. Follow me on Facebook at Coach Sherry Doyan, Twitter, Sherry Doyan. And you can tune in each and every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Central Time at blogtalkradio.com, Untangle Your Story. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a great day.